webinar entitled Regulatory Readiness, the Data Management Challenge. Today's webinar is sponsored by SunGard. I'm Julia Schieffer, the editor of DriftSource, and I'll be moderating the discussion today. The passage of the Dodd-Frank Act ushers in new regulations that will impact the way financial institutions manage data and report to regulators. These new rules require firms to collect a greater variety and amount of data to be reported to regulators in greater frequency than ever before. The collection of the data requires greater coordination of multiple and often incompatible systems, and the data also needs to be cross-referenced, which itself is usually a very large undertaking. In today's webinar, our panel of experts will explain the impact of this regulation on data management processes and explore how financial institutions like yourself can improve your operations to comply with these new rules and new regulatory requirements. The panel will discuss the new regulation that's coming down the path in terms of the Ownership and Control Report rule and also that of the Office of Financial Research. The panel will also be looking at how you can improve the data management processes and existing infrastructure to support these new regulatory reporting requirements, but also improve or support your own risk management strategies and solutions. So before I begin, I'd just like to say very quickly, for those members of the press on the call, if you could please not quote any of the speakers until you've sought their permission or our permission as the event organizers. So without further ado, let's go on to the first speaker. Norman Brower is the executive director at Morgan Stanley, where he leads the firm's data management service organization. This organization is responsible for all aspects of data management, including the coordination of data governance, data stewardship activities, overseeing data management projects, and professionals within that group. Norman is also a member of the EDM Council, and he works in the CIFMA Technology Working Group. Next, we have Anshuman Jaswal. He is a senior analyst at Celent Securities and Investment Group, and he's based in the India office. His expertise lies in market regulation, market infrastructure, electronic trading, derivatives, bond trading, hedge funds, and commodities markets. He is also the author of a recent research report entitled Assessing Impact of the Dodd-Frank Act in the Derivatives Market. Last but not least, we have Tony Siana. He is the Executive Vice President, Product Management for multiple SunGard solutions within their position, risk, and operations business. This includes responsibility over Click, StreamCore, and StreamGMI, and many more. At SunGard, Tony leads technology and service initiatives that are designed to help customers aggregate data to improve operating efficiency, enhance the end client experience, and improve efficiency, transparency, and risk management in post-trade derivatives. And for those latecomers, I'm Julia Schieffer from DriftSource, and I'll be moderating today. I'd like to make everyone aware of the Q&A section of your bottom right of your screen. Please send any questions at any time throughout this event, and we'll be addressing those questions either during the conversation or at the very end. So again, it's in the bottom right if you could send your messages there. Thanks very much. So to begin the conversation, I'd like to focus in on the Ownership Control Report Rule, or the OCR, as it's referred to. Anshuman, can you focus on maybe giving us a bit of background about the OCR and explaining what the basic data and reporting requirements are for this rule?
Sure. In terms of its content, it requires reporting entities, which would include exchanges, for example, to collect ownership and control data from what are called as root data sources. So these would include future commission merchants and the like. And the idea is to correlate the data to have a trade register on a daily basis. So this means that we have a very large volume of data that is going through not just the firms, but the exchanges and then the regulator. So this means that, it's an altogether new paradigm in a way, and we have to look at the collection and processing of information very differently from the way we are doing right now. In terms of the rule itself, it proposes that there will be 28 different data items to help identify customers. And some of these items would include trading accounting numbers, names, addresses of account owners, and so on. And the issue here is that practitioners in the industry believe that a lot of these data items might be repetitive or unnecessary. So there is a debate going on regarding the importance of the various items. Assuming that, you know, these are necessary, the idea is that collecting all this information would help the agency to do a better better job in terms of detecting and investigating attempted market manipulation. And it might also help them understand how large traders and firms establish positions in the market. If I may just speak a little about some of the issues that have come up regarding this. It is believed that at times the regulator might be moving too fast for the market to keep up with. So if you have just a year to comply with this regulation, people believe it might not be enough. Then the other issue is that of duplication, because similar data is reaching the exchanges from different FCMs. So there will be duplication there and at the overall level of the regulator. Finally, in terms of the firms and the industry itself, this would require a lot of re-architecture of the existing user setups. So this could take a lot of time. People are talking about years, and of course there would be a huge cost associated with it. So a working group with the Teachers Industry Association has estimated that it might take up to $18 million per firm. You're talking about a future commission merchant here, to be able to comply with the requirements of this particular rule. So it is a huge change.
We actually have a question from the audience, and Anshuman, I wonder if you can clarify this. The question is, well, who has to comply with this rule, and would, for instance, a UK asset manager who's registered with the SEC have to comply with the OCR? Do you have any knowledge of this?
No, at present my understanding is mainly it's in terms of market participants in the U.S. And I won't be very sure about the, you know, the requirements of the UK asset managers. It's not very clear.
Okay. Well, perhaps that'll be clarified as the rule-making process continues.
Yeah. Yeah, sure.
Great. Now, staying on the OCR topic for just a bit longer, Tony or Norman, do you guys have any comments about how financial institutions can adjust their business processes to comply with this rule, or at least hypothetically what it's aiming to do?
Yes, yeah, so I would, so it's Norman speaking, and I would point out a couple of things. I think all of these rules come out of the Dodd-Frank rule, and the goals of that, right, are focused on transparency, and systemic risk mitigation. So all of the reporting that we're talking about, whether it's around the OCR, and there are reporting requirements. So within the Dodd-Frank bill, they set up the Office of Financial Research, or the OFR, and underneath that, the kind of the market's been segmented to deal with the coverage between the SEC on certain products and the CFTC on other products. And in both these entities have an obligation to instantiate or create a set of reporting and repositories for where firms can submit these reports. And all this data is that's being designed is for the purpose of transparency of who you're dealing with, business, to allow aggregation and systemic roll-up to do systemic risk management. And with respect to how firms, I think, need to address or change their current approach, I guess I would take it from two very different perspectives. The first one is I would encourage firms to get engaged with these various industry initiatives, and there are working groups around the industry that are being put in place to help shape and answer the questions like you're talking, like, is the asset manager in London in scope? And I can say from sitting within the SIFPA technology working group, we're taking that question on, and there's a lot of debate. But if you look at the intent of the bill, it would imply that a firm such as that would probably end up in scope in the end. Right? So the way you would stay abreast of this or help influence and shape this would be to engage in those groups. And I think, you know, be sensitive to the fact that this, although it's an important piece of legislation, is not the only piece globally. You also have things like MiFID in Europe. I think internally, I think firms, it probably needs to be a little bit sensitive to where they are on the data management maturity curve. Certain firms that have very in-depth and robust account opening and legal entity management systems are probably ahead of the curve. Firms that don't are probably behind the curve. But when we get done with the legislation and the reporting requirements, you're probably going to need to be able to report your transactions not only on who you're doing the transaction with, but understanding what legal entity that firm is, and then what the, from a legal entity construct perspective, what's the immediate parent and ultimate parent in the corporate hierarchy. And the most important one being the ultimate parent, because that's where the regulator is going to be able to aggregate and do systemic risk management.
Well, moving on to systemic risk management, let's go to the Office of Financial Research. And can we first discuss what is the OFR, Office of Financial Research, and then go into the data reporting requirements of this new institution? And Anshuman, do you want to kind of lead us on with this question?
Julie, can I just make a comment about the OCR before you do that?
Yes, of course.
Sorry. I just wanted to mention that if anyone's really interested, you could look at what the working groups have been submitting back as responses to the CFTC. So if you were to look at the FIA response, and as Asherman and Norman mentioned, there's a lot of things that the CFTC asked for, over 28 additional data items, but the FIA has responded back with saying, we can get you 12 of them. The industry is working closely to try and help to guide the technology and what the industry thinks it can provide back to the commission, to help to ease the burden for all of the technology firms that need to provide that information.
Excellent point, Tony. Thank you.
Okay.
Now, let's move on to the Office of Financial Research. This is a big area, and again, it's just starting off with introduction of this new area.
Sure. Yeah. OFR is the information gathering and analysis arm of the Financial Stability Oversight Council, as most of you would know. And it has been entrusted with some principal tasks, which include the collection of data on behalf of the FSOC and the provision of that data to FSOC and its member agencies, and then ensuring that there is standardization in the types and formats of the data that is reported. It also has to conduct research based on the information it has gathered from the various firms and agencies that are reporting to it, and has to develop tools for risk measurement and monitoring on the basis of this research. And finally, it has to make the results of these activities available to the various financial regulatory agencies and help these agencies to determine what kind of types and formats of data need to be collected by them under the Dodd-Frank Act. The original idea to have the OFR within the Treasury Department was to improve the quality of financial data that would be available to the various policymakers, as most of you would agree that one of the problems that were faced in the financial crisis was the paucity of data, and therefore the inability of the various decision makers to come to educated conclusions. So the idea is now to have a more robust and sophisticated analysis on the basis of all this information that would be collected. So the OFR for this purpose would have two primary operation centers. One would be a data center which standardizes and validates all the data that would be collected. And then it would have a research analysis center, which would conduct and coordinate research, which I've mentioned earlier, and help in improving the regulation of the financial firms and markets.
Okay, great. Thank you, Anshuman. Does anyone else on the panel want to comment on how they're coping with the data and reporting requirements of the OCR?
This is Tony. I think, you know, since we really don't know what all those data reporting requirements are, there's a lot of questions as to what's going to be required, and I think we're going to talk about that in a little bit. But as for the OFR in general, I think, you know, they have a number of mandates, as Ashima was talking about. You know, the one, of course, conducting financial analysis, you know, and getting that information off to the Financial Stability Oversight Council. Standardized some of that financial reporting, you know, requirements so that they can get better information. Develop a reference database, which, by the way, is a big task, and maximizing data efficiency and security, and then producing reports for Congress. So we're trying to do all those things gives them a very daunting task, and I think one of the first things they tried to go off to get was, you know, legal entity identifiers. And we touched on that. We touched on that a little earlier, you know, and how difficult that was going to be in understanding who your ultimate client is, or who the ultimate owner of position of transactions is. And this is a big debate that's going on around the industry and around the world as to how to determine, you know, what a legal entity identifier will be that will become a standard for the industry and not just for the United States.
And if I could add to what Tony just said, because I am sitting with the CIFMA working group helping to define that from the financial services perspective, the legal entity identifier is, I guess, to give an analogy, is the equivalent of a CUSIP for a security. A legal entity identifier will be a unique identifier to identify an organization. But in order to meet the objectives of the OFR, again, to understand systemic risk management, make sure that a single entity doesn't have more than one legal entity identifier and the like, that turns out to be a process of requiring about roughly 20 to 30 different attributes that will be surrounding the legal entity identifier to allow things like duplicate detection and aggregation and roll-up type things. So given that type of expanse, as Tony said, imagine now trying to get the whole reference data repository for the industry in place. And you can see this is a pretty daunting task. And I just think beyond that, there's the just defining the data and data attributes, then there's going to be all the operational processes that go about, like how does a firm go and get itself registered, how often do they have to reassert themselves, and things of that nature. So we're at the tip of the iceberg on this one, and I think we're at the very early stages. And again, I would suggest everyone really try to engage and participate in shaping what these solutions look like in the end.
Great. Okay. Now, just a quick question for Norman, actually. To encourage people to get more involved in shaping how this does continue, would you recommend that they get involved in CIFMA tech groups, or, you know, is there a more specific group that they need to be thinking about joining?
It's not so easy. So I think, you know, there's probably a broad spectrum of firms out here, right? So if there are asset management firms or insurance firms. So the notions of the entities that partake in some of these transactions, right, could be beyond just the kind of the classic broker-dealer. And so I would suggest that individuals, based upon their knowledge and skills, would join the forums that it's appropriate for their sub-industry, as well as maybe their competency. So I know, for instance, within CIFMA, there's an operations working group, and then there's a technology working group. So, again, based upon who you are and what your skills are, you might want to do that. Also, internally within Morgan Stanley, what we've done is we've created an organization or within the organization, so to speak, that basically looks at the various regulations that are going on that would have kind of large-scale impact on either our operating model or our data and things of that nature. If your firm doesn't have such a group internally, I would suggest considering that, because that group is where you'd really kind of work as a clearinghouse internally and figure out which individuals from your firm are best suited to go represent your firm in these various forms.
Okay, great. Thank you, Norman. Unless anyone has anything else to add, I'll move on to the next question. Okay. I'm sure we'll be touching on identifiers again and throughout the discussion, but just to look at reporting requirements more generally, obviously there is a lot of up-and-coming new rules that will impose new regulatory or reporting requirements. But just talking about this generally, can we talk about what the implications of this new regulation will be on a real-time component to reporting? And Tony, do you want to give some input on this?
Sure. I'd love to. Let me start, actually, by saying that, we're not really sure of what all the implications are going to be because we're not sure what the regulator is going to ask us. But the implications of intraday monitoring and real-time requirements are clearly being talked about. As I talk to a lot of clients and customers, what I hear is that they're very concerned about regulatory risk. More so than they are concerned about operational risk or counterparty risk, because they've taken those and they've dealt with them. But the unknown quantity of regulatory risk really seems to be of utmost concern for a lot of firms. So having said that, I think the industry is somewhat used to reporting on an intraday basis transactional information, especially those transactions that are listed or already being monitored by a lot of the regulators. Dodd-Frank is now making the swap world, as we all know, in the OTC world, start to get reported as well, and as soon as what they're saying technologically practicable, which I find very very interesting terminology. But I think what they're trying to say is we want everything reported transaction by transaction all day long and as close to real time as possible. And that could be a daunting task given applications that are not necessarily real time in nature. Something that's not electronically executed needs to go through the process to get to a system that can be reported upon. All these types of things are parts of the issue that people are trying to deal with. And as far as going real-time monitoring of those transactions, that becomes an even bigger issue because you might even get your executions or be able to report on the trades as they're done. But a lot of the systems that are behind the scenes that are taking that information and creating your risk metrics, your positions, your activity, your balances that can determine your monitoring and your exposure to particular counterparties or asset classes or the combination of thereof are not always real time. Some of them require night cycles and batch processes. So, and again, you might have different applications with different asset classes that all have to come together to provide what the regulators are probably going to ask you for. You've heard some of it already. We've talked about, OCR is a perfect example of consolidating a lot of information and not just the trade anymore. The OFR is asking for a lot of things. They're trying to figure out what to do with legal entities and what they're going to do in standardizing all this information. And that's going to require every single application that's being utilized today to meet those standards. The implications are big. I think all these things are going to come to a point where we're going to need to figure out, what's going to be asked for and determine how we can provide it. So I wish I had a better answer for what the implications are exactly, but I think every single firm is looking at this and knows it's a daunting task and is trying to deal with it as best they can. And I know we're going to talk about how we think we can do some of that.
Great. Thank you, Tony. Do any of the other panelists want to comment on this question before we move on to data management more generally?
Yeah, I would just add to what Tony just said, and I agree with everything you said, and I think particularly focusing on the fact of the swaps and the OTCs, I think what we're going to see happen is the establishment of like the SDRs or the swaps data repository. I think we're going to see more utilities come up within the industry where things will be centrally submitted and cleared and the like, where before a lot of this stuff was done outside of the, kind of the classic where we do cash products in like a DTCC. Now I think we're going to see more of the structured products head towards clearing corps and standards around that.
Great. Thank you, Norman. I think you just answered a question from the audience, but I'm going to pose it again in case there's more to say. The question is, will you be able to discuss which financial institutions are likely to be caught under the reporting requirements? You already mentioned swaps and securities products. You know, is there any other instruments that you guys want to talk about at this stage?
Yeah, so when we've been working in these various groups, the word scope is what we're really focusing on here, right? So one of the scope is what asset classes. And so any asset class that can provide that type of problem. But if you think about the Frank Dodd also being a Consumer Protection Act as well, then, you know, we see asset-backed securities also coming into play. And that's going to be under the jurisdiction of the SEC. So you need to think about the scope of the problem and the asset classes that will be, or the transaction types that will be in scope, the legal entities, the participants, the counterparties, what those things will be in scope. And then the next thing is what utilities or where will we report. So let's say we have, you know, a large bulge bracket firm trading with a hedge fund. Does the hedge fund have to be in a interest rate swap? The question will be, do these both entities need to report, or is the hedge fund in or out of scope? Is an interest rate swap in or out of scope? And let's say we do have to report on that, where do they report? So, you know, you say, okay, let's put that to the CFTC or the SEC, right? Those type of things are what the industry is trying to shape right now and get more specificity about. But right now, I think, as Tony gave a good summary, it's a broad spectrum of the firms, it's a broad spectrum of the products, and I think what's still not really as clear is which utilities or entities will actually play a utilitarian role for trade reporting, submitting, or reference data registration, and the kind of whether or not the firms will resubmit directly to the OFR or will go to, like, the CFTC FDR, and the FDR will then, the CFTC will forward that data to the OFR. And so some of that data flow operating model stuff is still coming into focus.
Okay. Great. Thank you, Norman. Let's move on to data management, unless anyone else has a comment on reporting. So the next question is, what are the overall extended data requirements and how will data management processes need to change? For instance, how will firms be managing historical data and what will be the requirements related to reporting on historical transactions, for instance? A big question, I know, but Norman, if I can allow you to take the lead and explain your point of view on this topic.
So I kind of touched on this before, and what I think the answer is, everyone's going to have to internalize it. The more mature a firm is, or the more extensive a firm has been in dealing with capturing information, the better position will be. So, for instance, again, a key thing is going to be around legal entity or corporate hierarchies. You're really going to have an account to a legal entity. You need to know how that legal entity fits into the overall corporate hierarchy so you can actually go through the corporate tree and get to the ultimate parent. So legal entity and associating your account to a legal entity is going to be critical. The next one is going to be, because we're getting more into needing to do reporting of structured or OTC products, if you're in that space, to the extent that your stuff, your trades are being done through, Word documents that get passed back and forth through lawyers and taking 30 days to confirm and all that good stuff, or is it in a database where you've actually figured out how to standardize some of the terms and conditions such that you can make it reportable internally, queryable internally? So I think, you know, probably a good leading indicator about how prepared a firm will be for reporting to the various institutions externally is how robust is your internal data management and your internal risk management processes. So not to pick on Lehman, but when the crisis happened in 2008 and everyone was wondering where you stood from Lehman, you know, if you were able to, you know, push a button, go to a screen, make a phone call, and get the answer in 5 minutes or less, you're probably going to find this to be your adoption curve to be very low. If, however, you're still untangling that mess, you're probably going to find that that adoption curve is going to be very daunting, and you probably have a lot of work in front of you. So I think that's a good indicator for firms to look internally to see where they think they might be.
Excellent. Thank you, Norman. Tony, Antrim, do either of you want to comment on this as well?
Absolutely. I thoroughly agree with everything Norman said. I think it's going to be extremely important that beyond, you know, getting the real-time access to information, which in itself is daunting, you need to capture all the pertinent data you're going to be required in order to support whatever calculations and methodologies that the regulators are going to, you know, throw at us. We don't know what they all are yet, but you need to capture that information, first of all. You need to then be able to access it. And as Norman mentioned, the only way you're going to be able to access it, access that information, is if you somehow standardize it or normalize it, at least to the point where it's accessible and readily reportable on. In addition to capturing and having access to all that information, you also need to do some of the things that Norman also talked about. Legal entity reporting is one of those things, but you need to manage, in addition to that, multiple systems that you might have internally that have multiple sets of account numbers and structures that need to get standardized and cross-referenced so that you can at least identify who that client might be and then deal with the legal entity piece that the regulators are going to make even more complicated. So cross-referencing of account information, extremely important in order to do any of the reporting that's going to come down the pipe. In addition to that, I think you've got instrument data and across all asset classes that are complicated as well. Let's not forget we have different identifiers around the world for some of the same instruments. And we're going to need to make sure that when you capture that information, you're able to cross-reference that information so that you're looking at the same instrument, regardless of what identifier might have been sent over in. And that's going to lead to making sure that you're using the standard calculations for pricing and valuation across all those, applications that might be feeding your system. So you can't just send in a position with a valuation. You need to be able to make sure you can revalue it in the calculations that you're doing so that you're using a standard calculation across your holistic enterprise. These are pretty big and interesting things that have to get done in order to manage the preparedness for the future.
Yeah, I would just add to what Tony just said and say that if a firm does have multiple account masters, which is not atypical, or multiple security masters, that may or may not be a problem. If you have good stewardship and good governance in place where you've done partitioning of the data sets that are in each of those masters, then I think you're probably okay. If, however, you find yourself another leading indicator, if you have lots of internal reconciliation processes that are continually trying to figure out which one is right and that type of thing, it's probably another indicator that you probably are on the lower end of the maturity curve on data management. And in order to do this regulatory reporting and do it consistently and do it in the time frames that are being requested, I think you're probably going to have to take a strong look at where you are, how mature you are, and whether or not you're positioned internally to meet your external reporting obligations.
One question I had, and it's based on time. I know it hasn't been defined yet, but in terms of moving closer to real-time reporting and intraday reporting requirements, can you guys discuss how that's going to be evolving in the next year and how rapidly will firms be needing to get up to real-time reporting for different aspects of data management?
So I think the answer is yes, about three questions. It's a compound question. I think some of this stuff is coming pretty soon and getting, doing trade reporting so that there's some level of price transparency, and then they're going to, when they report that to the tape, they'll make it opaque on who's in the trade, but they actually do want to show some price transparency. And I think we're going to see that. The time frames I've seen banded thrown around are in the next, 6 to 8 months, right? Then there's the notion of other obligations you're going to have. So any trade life cycle events that would materially change the event, any corporate actions, all these type of events are going to have to be recorded, maybe not on a real-time basis, but probably a same-day basis, right? So everything is done. Give-ups or assignments, same type of scenario where in order to understand who truly is your counterparty, once those events occur, they're going to have to report it same day and then give them back. So real-time, if you take real-time to be, like a trade with or, be sub-1 second, then I don't think these are real-time. But if you take real-time to be same business day or within 15 minutes of an event occurring, which I think is probably more practical in these given constructs, I think you're going to see progressively more of that type of reporting requirement. And I guess, you know, jumping a little bit to another macro comment, when you look at the amount of regulation we have to deal with today and the amount we had to deal with 10 years ago, and you look at the reporting, the level of detail, the level of specificity, and the time compression of the reporting, I think you can see the trend, right? There's progressively more regulations globally. We all participate in the markets globally, so you have different regulatory reporting obligations globally. More detail, more specificity, shorter time frames to do the reporting. And not only that, if you do a report and then tomorrow the regulator asks you to give you a report as of, you better be able to produce that same report, right? Because if you produce a report different than the one you submitted, you're going to have yet a different set of problems.
Great. Tony or Antonin, do either of you guys want to comment on data management before we move forward?
Just one thing. I believe that in addition to what has already been said, firms should look at this as an opportunity to rationalize the data that exists within them, and Dodd-Frank should, on the whole, be seen as a driver of, you know, better data management. So the idea would be that at times data silos exist within firms, so that is something that could be overcome. You might see that there might be some loss of functionality within business units, but on the whole, the consolidated data within a firm would improve, and we also have to ensure that the duplication of data that might occur has to be removed. So the idea is to improve the data and reference standards that the firms are complying with, and I believe that once the firms realize this and start moving on this, the institutions and companies that get a head start would actually have a competitive.
Okay, great,
firms,
thank
and
you.
They have to take it seriously.
Oh, okay. I think there was a little bit of a glitch there, but Tony, do you have anything to comment? Otherwise, we'll move on to technology.
No, that's fine. I can talk more on technology.
Well, I'm going to ask you to take the lead in the next question because this is really your area of expertise. The question is, how can technology improve or help firms improve with their compliance of these new data and reporting requirements related to new regulation? Understandably, a lot of the rules haven't been formalized yet, so I know some of this is somewhat hypothetical, but as you mentioned before, the basis is there. So can you walk us through how your experience in this and dealing with this on behalf of your clients?
Sure, I'd be happy to. As I mentioned, I mean, the bigger issue for everyone is financial services firms have grown up having multiple silos. I mean, I think Ashman just mentioned it. And these multiple silos have different applications and different technologies that store their information. And the only way we're going to be able to get closer to real time and provide more information on a consolidated, holistic view across a firm's enterprise is to somehow capture that information, standardize it, and normalize it so that you have access to it. So I started to talk about it earlier. We need to capture the information in as close to real time as possible. We need to be able to cross-reference account information, cross-reference security information, calculation methodology need to be standardized. Then have access to that information by making sure that everything that's positioned into this repository is positioned in a standard and normalized fashion. That will allow clients to have access to all the information that's captured and write whatever reports or requirements to come or get handed to us by the regulators in as close to a real-time nature as possible. And I say as close to because, as mentioned, there's transactions happening around the world that are going to need to be captured, and you know that's never going to happen in real time. But I can envision the regulators asking for a capital computation in the middle of the day. or understanding what your exposure might be to a particular counterparty or a legal entity, much like was unable to happen for Lehman. And I think Norman mentioned that earlier. And part of that, if you saw that issue as it went around the world, people couldn't get a handle on what that real exposure was in some cases for weeks and months. As you saw numbers come out, from different firms for quarterly, it just kept getting worse because no one really understood the complete exposure under a legal entity. So I think all those things have to get thought about and managed up front in your data management cycle in order for you to prepare for these new requirements. And as you said, we don't know what they all are yet, but you can make a pretty educated guess that we're going to need to report in as close to real time every transaction that you do. You're going to need to start to be prepared for what's going to come after that, and that's the regulatory risk and the regulatory reporting that everyone's got in the back of their heads as to how they're going to manage it. And you can see some of it already. The OCR wants 28 data points. The industry is ready to give them about 12 of those. The OFR is talking about legal entities, and I think that's going to take a very long time to identify, and never mind the fact that that's not even globally, because they can't control what's going to happen outside the United States. They can only make recommendations. And we do know that MiFID and other organizations around the world are certainly looking at what's being done and trying to make their own decisions as to what they want to do, and they're going to work together, I'm sure, to at least try to come up with something that's going to work across those boundaries. But this is a pretty big and daunting task.
Norman, do you have any comments about how you're dealing with technology from a more general point of view? I know you've touched on a couple of this already, but do you have anything that you'd like to add?
Yeah, I would take a broader definition of the word technology to perhaps provide a different answer or complementary information that Tony provided. And that I think there's a need, or hopefully coming from the opportunity to develop standards. So, you know, we talk about legal entity identifier. That will be one standard. If every firm on the street has a single identifier to identify a counterparty and that counterparty's relationship in a corporate hierarchy for doing systemic risk management, that will be a, monumental step forward. If we can figure out standards for how to actually model the terms and conditions of the various swaps and OTC products, another monumental step forward. So, the technology for storage and moving data quickly and distributing it and securely and all that, very important. The business intelligence of being able to aggregate and do where are you, very important. But I think a lot of firms, a lot of that stuff is well understood. We've always just had to solve that internally, and I'm hopeful and optimistic that the increased regulatory requirements will manifest itself into the realization of standards that I think has been elusive.
Okay, great. Thank you, Norman. Antoine, do you have any comments on technology? Otherwise, we'll go to the next question.
Sure, just a brief comment. The idea is that, there won't be any single piece of technology that would solve all these compliance requirements. Also, most of the technology that is required is already there, so that is not an issue. The idea is how to combine all of this in terms of meeting the requirements for data management, risk analytics, and ensuring that there is rationalization within the firms. So there is some degree of reordering of priorities within firms as well as IT departments that needs to occur. And furthermore, the issue might be that we have to deal with a number of varied requirements from different regulators simultaneously with the overlap. So that is something that firms have to be prepared for.
Okay, great. Let's go on to the final question, future outlook and final takeaways. So I want to ask the panel generally, what are the long-term benefits that will come out of the efforts to improve data management to meet these regulatory requirements and also their own internal risk management strategies? So, Norman, I hope you can start off and help us understand perhaps some of the opportunities that lie in the establishment of these standards that you've been talking about with regards to the instrument identifiers.
And hopefully it's not too repetitive, but I think it's beyond just instrument identifiers, although it's interesting that you brought that up because typically we don't have a, we have a notion of a CUSIP or something like that for common stock, but we don't necessarily have that type of thing for the structured products. So how we go about modeling the structured products and coming up with standard terms and conditions, that there could be a lot of benefits to that, right? It's not just becoming compliant with the regulatory reporting, but internally time to market on putting together OTC contracts and confirming them. You know, that would be a step forward, getting to a point where it's taking less time to confirm or understand the risk associated with them, both internally and reporting and external aggregated risk. That will be a step forward. So, you know, standards is clearly one of them, and you can take that in many dimensions. The LEI is one, structured for the model terms and conditions for the structured products would be another. Business processing standards as well. So, you know, it's an opportunity for, as an industry, to re-engineer the way the information flows. So there's a lot of discussion going on, for instance, when you set up a legal entity identifier, is there an opportunity for a utility that sets up the legal entity identifier to kind of maintain and manage the corporate hierarchy? Or should firms themselves be required to provide their corporate hierarchy? And you know, there's a lot of debate on both sides of that, but when you look at the risks associated with it, then you say, we probably need to ask the firms to report on their own and assert, this is my legal entity, here's my ultimate parent, here's my immediate parent. And then in aggregate, the regulators, if all the firms are reporting on that, that will come into focus so that the regulators will be able to get the tapestry, if you will, of all the corporate hierarchies across all the firms, or at least the ones that they're interested in, which are the ones that are participating in these markets that in aggregate represent some sort of systemic risk. So that's one. Best practices will come out, I think, both internally and externally. I think we'll see progressively more of that. I talked about data management and how firms could probably look at some leading indicators of where they are today. If you're not high on that curve, this regulatory drivers are going to provide you the impetus to actually build and sell these programs, providing internally, you know, you have that right leadership team in place that understands the requirements that are required from both the technology and the data management disciplines to achieve those requirements. If you don't, you're probably going to have to go get that as well. And lastly, I think, interesting concept, I'm part of all these data management groups, and I know all these people who run around with these CDO titles, these chief data officer titles. And, we, you know, when we get together, we all kind of chuckle because there's no real, inside the education system, a discipline around data management. There's disciplines around technology and accounting and you know, those type of things. But data management as a discipline that you can learn in the university or that you have departments. Another indicator is, you know, the data management office, is it an IT function or is it an operations function? And my personal opinion is if you answer IT or operations, you probably got it wrong. I think it's an independent function, independent of IT, independent of operations, that's a peer of those two organizations. And so I would suggest, you know, again, looking at those type of things. So I'm hoping, in summary, we see a maturity around the importance of data management. We see increased standards coming out of this. And, again, the objective, and those are, like, the ones I get personally, right? I think we're all, as firms and industry, going to see better risk management internally. And as the goal of the OFR, the Dodd-Frank bill, systemic risk management and avoidance of some of the things we saw happen in 2008, I'd like to believe we're going to mitigate those problems, the structural problems, and avoid that from being a reoccurring event.
Excellent. Thank you, Norman. We have been getting a lot of questions on LAI, so I think it's good that you touched on identifiers and standards again. But just to ask the same question and of Anshuman, do you have any final takeaways or points that you want to reiterate to the audience for what they should be taking home with them as the most important aspect of this call?
Sure. We have discussed a number of ways in which firms could possibly cope with these regulations, but we must also keep in mind that regulators are still in the process of implementing the Act, and the situation is quite fluid. So the companies have to keep up with the various new rules that are coming through. Also, it is important that market participants do keep these developments in mind while preparing themselves for the changes according to these regulations, and they should take it as an opportunity to evaluate and rationalize existing data management and IT practices. So this is something that firms should actually see as you know, an opportunity to improve their organization and their current practices, and then they should try to come up with their own solutions to the problems. So the final idea is that this particular situation should be used to foster greater efficiency and consistency across different business units and the different ways in which data is managed across these units. And to conclude, as someone has already mentioned in this particular context, one basically needs to make lemonade with the lemons that DocSend has given us. So that is the final word that I would have to have on this.
Thank you. Well, that's an optimistic take on Dodd-Frank with the lemon and lemonade. So thank you for that, Anshuman. Tony, just some final comments and takeaways that you can offer our audience.
Well, let me first say that I agree with everything that Norman and Anshuman have said. Clearly, some of the long-term benefits of better data management and the ability to is clearly the ability to meet the regulatory compliance that's going to come our way. But you will, of course, by doing that, have the ability to internally manage your risk much better. You'll be able to look at counterparty exposure across all of your asset classes by legal entity and understand exactly what that might be, much like we couldn't do back in 2008. I think you'll also, by having all this information, you'll be able to now look at asset classes and determine what exposure might be to a particular asset class or a particular country that's issued particular assets. So you can determine that if you have there's a problem in a particular country, as we're seeing a lot of that right now, you'd be able to look across your firm and understand what exposure you might have to any assets that have been issued by that particular country or currency. So I think these things are all going to be wonderful benefits from being able to manage that data across your entire application set. And Norman mentioned time to market. I think time to market's a huge one, because if you've got the ability to do this and a new asset class comes around, which we all know we're pretty good at doing in this industry, is creating new types of instruments to trade, you more than likely will be ahead of the others in telling the regulators what it is and being able to report on it because you've got that infrastructure in place. So all those things, I believe, are important. Just two more quick ones, and one is the industry standards that will come out of this. The OFR is going to create some, but I think the industry, the standards that are going to come out of the individual firms are going to help them to manage whatever standards get issued by the government and that government around the world. So, because they're not all going to be identical. But if you're able to access your information and you've got it normalized and standardized internally, you should be able to format it to whatever any given government asks you for. And probably the biggest benefit, and I don't think we've really touched on this, is that the financial institutions will now be able to also provide to their customers a single holistic view of their activity and their positions across all of their individual applications. Most financial firms still produce multiple statements for the same client because of the way we're holistically built. By the individual silos. So I think that's a big benefit that will come out of better data management as well, as well as the standards for valuation and pricing, I think, are pretty big and pretty important.
Great.
So if I have a takeaway, that's it.
Well, I think you guys summed up everything quite well. I'd like to take a couple questions from the audience before we end. Just to the audience, if you do have any remaining questions, please submit them now to the bottom right corner, as you see in the Q&A section. It's better than sending us messages individually. We're paying attention to that window. So the first question I have is for the entire panel, and the question from the audience member asks, I heard the most used word by the panelists today is daunting. while referring to the tasks at hand to be able to comply with the regulatory requirements. So how should financial institutions get started to make this more manageable, and what are your recommendations?
I can certainly start that one for you, Julie, if you like. It's Tony. I think firms need to look at what their biggest pain points are and start there. You know, it might be certainly easier to do some of these things that we're talking about in the more established markets that are already being done and reported on in real time. You might be able to do your equities today, but you might need to take your fixed income or your, or as we're all focused on the OTC world, and determine that that's probably the first place to start. And as you start to capture that information, then you can start to add your other asset classes and your other pain points. But I think you cannot, it's not a big bang type of approach, because I think that would be, you know, detrimental to trying to get it done. So I think you need to start with your pain points and start to put the ability and the infrastructure together so that you can continue to move forward with all your asset classes.
So I guess, Julie, the way I would respond to that, first of all, don't think, I guess it's a lot of work, but everything we do is a lot of work. So hopefully we take it in context. I think I would suggest to the individual, to the firms, look at your organization and see if you have groups that are dedicated to these functions. So, again, if you're treating this as an isolated data warehousing project somewhere, you're probably looking at it from the wrong perspective. You need to have data governance, and from data governance, everything will kind of flow. You'll need this data to do internal risk management, regulatory reporting, client reporting, performance reporting, all the types of things the executive management team ask and need for. What we're seeing here is just a shift in being able to do it internally, first being able to do it in a way that's in a coherent way with the rest of the industry. So I believe, I'd like to actually say, I hope Pony's wrong, that people aren't still receiving three statements from the same institution. But internally, you need to be doing aggregated risk exposure, aggregated P&L. We have those needs internally. So internally, all firms have tried to solve this problem one way or another. What we're seeing with the regulators and the new regulations is a need to kind of find this standard form of submitting and identifying everything, so that the internal processes we all do internally to reconcile or align and organize our information, the regulators need to do that across the industry, across all the various market segments, and the only way they're going to do that is through standards. So if you're having these challenges internally, I would suggest establishing a data organization. And instantiating data governance is one of the fundamental building blocks. And with that type of leadership, everything else should start to come into focus.
Perhaps on a related question, and I'm paraphrasing here because we've got a couple questions asking very similar things, is where financial institutions or data professionals can go to find information about the industry associations and different groups that are addressing these reforms and reporting. There's also been questions about more information on the SIFMA initiative specifically. I know that's a huge question and multiple ones in one go, but does the panel have any advice for a data professional looking to find more information and get more involved in these initiatives and where they can go?
So I don't know a directory, so to speak. I will suggest you might start with the EDM Council, Enterprise Data Management Council, which is a not-for-profit organization that is kind of a community of people interested in data management and the concept of data management. And they're not just dealing with these issues. They're trying to define things like data maturity models, very similar to the CMM software maturity model that is out there. They're also trying to have working groups on data quality and practice around data quality. So that's one organization that's pretty good, and that works as a good network where you could actually find other individuals. That would be for if you just want to take a data-focused look at it. I would also suggest all the various – look at the conferences around the industry. There's a Financial Information Management Association, or FIMA, and that's another big one. I think it's in March of this year here in New York City, and then I think it's July or so in Europe. So, you know, participating, going to these things, going there, not just to go to the trade booths, but to network, swap business cards, meet people. Talk to your operations people. Your operations people probably belong to one or more groups, and the IT or the data part of that, they'll probably be, they should be dealing with people who would have a network that they could extend and open up to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Norman. Tony, do you have any advice for people who are looking to get more information? I assume that you get a lot of clients asking you questions.
Yes, we do. And I think, as Norman mentioned, I mean, the EDM Council is one. The working groups for the different industry initiatives around the world are a key. But I think, you know, one of the things you can also do is you can just search for the reform and the changes that are happening, and you'll see not only the requests from the councils and the regulators, but you'll also see the responses from the industry groups, and you can find out which of those industry groups and working groups are working on some of the things that we're talking about here. CIFMA certainly has a number of them. The FIA has a number of them. I know there's MIFID working groups as well. So I think if you're familiar in your particular country of what the industry working groups are that are associated with the regulators, that you should definitely look out to those guys. And there are working groups that are happening all around the world to try and deal with all these things that we're talking about. But those ones I mentioned are clearly part of the ones that I keep focus on. And I also try to look at what's been filed. So if you look, look at the registers of what's been requested by the regulators and what the responses are going back, you'll be able to be up to date on all these things.
Okay, fantastic. And I'd like to just say, for those of you who aren't familiar with Cerebrosis, we have a regulation timeline which gives you basically a visual for all of the news of the week related to regulation. So that's kind of more of the reform side of it as opposed to the industry group, but that resource is there for anyone who wants to look at that. But that is pretty much all the time that we have today. So I would really like to thank our speakers, Norman, Tony, and Ashiman, who've kindly shared their insight and information and expertise with us today. Thank you also to our sponsor, SunGuard, who put together this event. We hope that the audience has found this event informative, and we invite you to participate in a short survey that we have, multiple choice, I promise, only about 9 questions, that you can submit at the very end of this event. So please give us your feedback. But without any other questions from you, we'd like to thank you for joining us today. We hope that you can join us again in the future for new events that we have up and coming. And please register with the resource to hear first about these free events coming up. Thanks very much, and goodbye.